right, everybody, welcome back to the Takedown episode 4. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Greiner, and today with me, I'm very excited to have Dr. Jerome Craig. He has spent his academic professional life studying various aspects of human health as a personal trainer, massage therapist, chiropractor, and college instructor, and most recently, certified functional medicine practitioner. He doesn't merely treat, but he aims to educate his patients so that being under his care feels like a partnership, because it indeed is. Amen to that, man. I agree 100%. His goal is to treat the whole person, not just their symptoms, and teach them to become stewards of their own health and wellness. Dr. Craig, welcome to the show, my friend. It's great to have you. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thank you for having me, Dr. Greiner.
My pleasure, my friend. And just to let everybody know, you know, Dr. Craig and I were discussing before we got on the meeting here, kind of, you know, off the audio and off video, just about sharing, you know, our interests, things that we have going on. And, you know, one of the things that I'd asked him about talking about was healthcare in general. And do we want to dive deep? And I think that, you know, he made some really great points off camera here, excuse me, talking about that, you know, everywhere that you look, and I love his word, he uses granular, you know, you're looking at, everybody wants to talk about biochemistry, physiology, the second that food hits your mouth, all the pathways and things that has to happen for it to be digested. I want to talk today, and Dr. Craig agrees, that we want to talk about healthcare, what it is, taking back our responsibility, how to be well, and I live, you know, we're in the part of the country that I live, Doc. So you're in the Northwest, Pacific Northwest, is that correct?
That is correct, yeah.
So
I'm in Portland.
Oh, okay. How's the weather there, by the way, these days?
You know, it's all over the place. It's spring. We'll have splashes of showers and then sun, and one day it'll be 80, the next day it'll be 50. You know, right now the sun is starting to break around noon, and it looks like it's drying up. It's going to be 80s, mid-80s by next week, but
nice.
Right now it's like 60.
Yeah.
Not super pleasant.
That's, you know what, here's about the same. We had a really good week last week, and today's kind of doomy and gloomy, but I'm in Pennsylvania. I'm in Pittsburgh, and that's kind of what it does around here. But I think tomorrow's supposed to be nice. But I guess, Doc, we can just get rolling with all this. So let me ask you this question. I think that, well, first let me say this. I think that in order for people to be well, truly be well, right? Not just covered in masks and symptoms, however that may be, people have to have a good understanding of what healthcare actually is. So give me your thoughts on what healthcare really is, and kind of maybe some mistakes that people are making these days regarding healthcare and how we kind of fix that, in your opinion.
Well, I think the biggest part is the programming that is gone on, you know, from all sorts of angles that's come at us, where we no longer believe in the human body to be able to deal with what's coming our way. We believe that, you know, I think part of the language that I don't like is like, oh, I want to get healthy. I want to, you know, get in shape. It's like you get something, you walk in, you give someone money and you get a pill. I mean, I don't understand that. You know, it's not about becoming healthy. It's not about the actions. It's about receiving. And I think that people have totally outsourced their health to others. You know,
yes.
I got to go and see my doctor to tell me whether or not I'm healthy. Where we don't even listen to ourselves anymore. We don't check in with our bodies. We don't see how that last night affected the way I feel today. I don't think about how my sleep is affecting my performance. I mean, the people who are doing that are the ones who are like trying to optimize.
Mm-hmm.
But for the vast majority of people, it's just like setting the foundation is what they need to be doing rather than optimizing. And I think everyone's really excited about the sexy tools, the nootropic drugs, the latest fitness craze equipment, anything like that. But they just haven't bothered to really examine themselves and look at the variety of different pillars of health and looking at themselves and understanding where they need to make improvements. They're looking for other people to tell them.
Yes.
And I think that's a huge problem with health. And, you know, you said it in one of your previous episodes, you know, healthcare is self-care. And I believe that too. Absolutely. And I think that most people believe it, but they just don't try to steer people that way.
Right. Well, I was like I was saying before, one of the things, and I'll give you an example of what you're talking about. This morning, I'm typically not in my clinic on Friday mornings, but I was there this morning. I had a consultation with somebody, and then my nurses were seeing people, and I had a conversation with one of the people that had seen one of my nurses, and she was basically saying what you're saying. She said, you know, people are going to their doctors, let's say annually, you know, they're going to their doctors, they're getting some sort of an examination, and it's maybe some labs. If everything comes back okay, they're told, well, you know what, I'll see you next year, congratulations. And maybe next year they come back and there's something wrong, and the answer probably is, you know, here's some medication, you know, your hemoglobin A1C is elevated, here's metformin, or, you know, your total cholesterol is elevated, here's a statin. And I'm always thinking to myself, what about in the meantime? You know, what are the things that people are doing in the meantime to make sure that however frequently they may be seeing their doctor, that things are going to be, or they're giving themselves the best chance to be okay. And I think, like you mentioned, outsourcing your care, you know, I don't know, for some odd reason, it seems especially in healthcare that people, they want, the only people that they want to take care of them are the people that are not responsible for their health. It's like they want to give it to everybody else except for the people that are really responsible, and that's us. You know
Absolutely.
What I mean?
Absolutely.
So that's, yeah, go ahead. Sorry,
brother. Yeah, we can only be responsible for ourselves. You know, we can't really, and that comes for you and I, and we try as doctors to be responsible for others' health, but all we can really do is educate them and guide them in the right direction and answer their questions. And that comes back to the original meaning of doctor, which is to teach, you know, and that's really what it should be about, is teaching people about how to be healthy. And I feel that, unfortunately, healthcare isn't about that. And right now we see this influx of, you know, podcasts and summits about this, that, and the next thing. And I think the intention's there to teach people how to be healthy by giving them ideas. But unfortunately, it's so commercialized because doctors have to make money. So a lot of those platforms are used to sell certain protocols, certain supplements, certain books and courses and all of those things, which I think the intention's in the right place. But people are buying those things expecting those things to fix them.
Right.
And that is a problem, right? So I made a little video a while ago about somatosis and podcastitis, right? Because I feel like there's a condition, like the more health summits you listen to, the more convinced you are that you're broken, right?
Right.
And it's just like, oh my gosh, I need to do that thing. I need to do this. I'm not doing what that doctor's told me to do. I'm not doing what that doctor told me to do. And people are lost, because they're taking in so much information, but not taking basic actions towards health.
Exactly. That's a good point. Yeah. And I had two episodes ago, I had Dr. Michael Meehan on, and he was talking about, you know, he called, and I love how he referred to the kind of like the basics, the fundamentals of health, he called the low-hanging fruit, you know, what you're eating, sleeping, sunlight, you know, things like that. And then we did talk about optimizing, and I do think that, you know, for maybe certain individuals, and maybe optimizing for, let's say, I don't know, a middle-aged guy with low testosterone, he has a good lifestyle, he's doing a lot of really good things, but maybe he needs TRT to improve his levels. I guess you can call that optimizing, or other things, even things that we do in our clinic, you know, I wouldn't say a very small percentage, but for example, a smaller percentage of the people that we see are people with like these kind of not so common health problems. Like we see a lot of people with Lyme disease. We see a lot of people with the black mold, heavy metals. So sometimes we do have these treatments where they're temporary treatments for a short period of time to kind of get these people over a hump. But I think generally speaking, you know, you have the things, the foundation, you know, eating a certain way, moving a certain way, getting sunlight, you know, those are things that everybody should be doing. And what I find is, and you could tell me if you experience the same thing, is I have people that are calling our clinic, and we have multiple providers. We have people that are calling our clinic and saying, hey, I want to come in. I heard you guys do this treatment. You know, you're doing IV ozone, you're doing major autohemotherapy, IV vitamin C, NAD, right? So these people want to do all these things, but their lifestyle is so horrendous. And we tell them, listen, you cannot, it doesn't work that way. You have to take care of yourself first and foremost. So I think that people, a lot of people would benefit from just understanding the basis. And honestly, you had mentioned about the, would you call it summititis?
Yeah.
Yeah, summititis, where, you know, like you mentioned, if people have too much information, maybe it just becomes, it's overload and they just, they feel like they need more than they really need. So that's a very good point.
Yeah, I think the something you said right there is that some of these people need a medical intervention to get over the hump. But the problem is that short-term intervention now becomes the panacea that's supposed to make their life better. It's a band-aid that it never comes off. And people feel like, well, that's, you know, suppressing the symptoms, so I don't need to make any change. And right. I think that is one of the biggest disservices in, you know, just the way medicine is practiced. And I think that I don't know a good way around it. I feel like we need to reprogram people from the get-go. We need to, I think, start in schools, like instead of like dissecting pigs and, you know, that kind of thing, we right. need to look at human anatomy from a young age, you know, yes. and say, hey, this is how the human body works.
Right.
What can you do to take care of this? The only true possession that you'll ever have is this body that you carry through your whole life. I used to teach anatomy and physiology to massage students, and there's people, you know, 20s, 30s, 40s, who are coming in there, and, you know, you'll talk about the adrenals, and people are like, whoa, I had no idea the adrenal was on the kidney, you know,
right,
it was like in the brain or something, and I'm just like, wow, how yeah. do we get, you know, 4 or 5 decades into life, and we don't even know where our organs are?
Right.
You know, I think that is a major disservice to us all. And right. is it some great big conspiracy to keep us dumb and sheeple so we can just take things from the man, the pharmaceuticals, the medical establishment? I don't know. But surely there's another way where we can just start teaching people a little bit more about themselves without getting super granular. We don't need to know every single metabolic pathway. We don't need to get down SNPs and all of that. Stuff to understand that we can be healthy,
right?
You know,
yes, 100%. I agree. And to that point, to your point there, I consider myself to be basically, I guess a glorified coach. You know, people come to see us, and you know, I get academics, right? Academics, scientists, when they, you know, talking with each other, I get. Having those conversations. But, you know, one of the things that I see mostly academics or scientists talk about, you know, they'll say things like, for example, the plural of anecdote is not data, right? And I think, you know, I'll be honest with you, I don't know how to feel about that. I'm not a scientist, right? Maybe technically that's true, but you work with human beings, I work with human beings, and you know just as well as I do that the only thing that people care about, if they're coming to see you, they're coming to see me or anybody else for that matter, the only thing that they care about is, can you help them? Yeah. And I don't know that they care to know the pathophysiology of type 2 diabetes. All they want to know is, can you help me get better? You know, and what's interesting to me is when I sit down with somebody, we have these conversations and it's almost like I'm talking to maybe like my mother, you know, like, you know, so here's what you're eating. Switch to this. You know, we can do labs and we can do all, you know, we do all that stuff. But, you know, at the very foundation of it, like you said, do people really care enough? And unless, you know, like you, I know you're a smart guy. I like to consider myself as a guy that's decent at helping people get better. You know, I don't claim to be an expert at everything, but at the very least, making these things practical for people, making it I guess as easy as possible. If you, you know, it might not always be easy, but if it can be easier on them, then again, that's all they really care about is getting better. I don't know that they, that everybody cares about it. And again, maybe you do. I know that you know the pathophysiology of type 2 diabetes, but do your patients care about that? You know what I mean?
I don't think they care. I think they want to, I think sometimes consequence helps. So you can describe the pathway and the progression of disease, and then maybe somebody's like, maybe I should find out a little bit more about this. I think that helps, but I think that not everyone wants to be a scientist, and I don't think everyone cares about what science says. I think it's more about what they are willing to do in their lives, and that comes down to their basic belief about themselves.
Right.
And I think that for me, you know, I mentioned to you, I have this thing that I'm working on is talking about building your health esteem, where a lot of people just have such poor comprehension of how the body works and such poor understanding of how they need to be to get better, because there are so many different voices out there coming from every single angle. And everyone who writes a book has a bias. I mean, and they're going to find any sort of studies to prove that. And so right. People can read things every single day that contradict each other, and it just becomes so overwhelming that they go, well, I've tried everything, what's the point, you know?
Right.
And they
right.
They've listened to every single word, you come in and you're going to help them, and they're sitting there waiting for you to say something that they can disagree with because they've heard somebody else say something different. And I feel like what I want to educate people to understand is that, you know, humans have made it a really, really long way through evolution over thousands and thousands of years, you know, without doctors telling them how to be healthy.
Right.
You only went to a doctor when you were sick. You know, you didn't go to a doctor when you weren't sick. That wasn't the purpose of a doctor, right? So. Mm-hmm. We stayed healthy through wisdom of our ancestors and interacting with our natural environment and being seasonal in our approaches, you know, following the rhythm of nature, as you will, eating different things in the summer versus the winter, moving yes. differently in the summer than the winter, sleeping differently, and all of those kinds of things. And I look around us and I go, geez, you know, these little birds outside my window have been doing just fine without anyone telling them what to do,
right.
You know? And we are animals just like all of them.
Agreed.
And I think there's a point where we become too smart for our own good, and we're trying to reinvent nature. We can, you know, see that with our food supply. It's like Frankenfood, right?
Right.
And I think the problem is that we just don't believe that we can survive without 5 servings of veggies or fruit per day, or 9 servings or grain or whatever that, you know, stupid
right.
stuff.
Right.
And I think that we just need to understand that we need to be our own experiment. We need to run our own little science experiment on ourselves, deal with the different controls and variables, and look for the outcome, you know? So somebody comes in, they're like, yeah, I got digestive problems, IBS, SIBO, whatever you want to call it, just give it a name. It doesn't really matter what the name is.
Right.
You know, let's see what we can do by you running the experiment.
Right.
And that's why I like, I mentioned earlier, I love the extremes, you know. Vegans are doing this, carnivores are doing that, but they all inform of us in the middle.
Right.
You've done a carnivore bout. I did a carnivore bout. You know, I was a vegetarian decades ago for a short period of time. And I've done all these different experiments, but I listen to my body. I'm like, yeah, you know, it's time to move on from this. It doesn't yes. make sense that me at 49 is going to be responding to the same diet and the same lifestyle as I was when I was 29. And it certainly is not going to hold true till I'm 69. I'm going to have to make changes
right.
because I'm changing. So why should it all be the same all the time? And that just doesn't make sense to me.
No, I agree wholeheartedly. You know, one thing that I'm thinking about when you're talking is, if you I guess look at the cultures and philosophically, it's like we're on the same wavelength, because I think that, you know, it's health, the thought of health or healthcare. You know, you have to have a basic you know, regardless of what camp that you're in or how you believe, you know, I believe that there's just as much philosophy in healthcare or how you approach your health as there is in practice. And I was thinking, I was having this conversation with one of my staff the other day, and I said, if you think about these cultures in the world that have all these, you know, centenarians, all these older people, you know, Abkhazians, Hunzans, all these people, different people, and you think about how long they live, it's not because they have a fantastic healthcare system. It's because they live in accordance with how they were created to live. You know, they're not running to hospitals that, you know, annually or whenever to get labs to check everything. They're just, they're doing what they know inherently what to do. And I think, like you said, that a lot of people are missing that. So for me, I feel like that's a conversation that has to happen with these people. And honestly, you know, I tell people all the time, you know, for me, and even on the topic of the ins and outs, or, you know, what do I eat or what do I do? You know, I think that goals are important, obviously. You know, I used to be a competitive bodybuilder in my 20s. Now I'll be 44 in August, but in my 20s, I was a competitive bodybuilder, and I trained and I ate to do that. Now I don't do that anymore. So, you know, I fast longer now, and I do things different now. And it's just like you said, things have to change. And one of the things I think that I'm most excited to talk to you about is healthcare in general versus healthcare in specifics. So let me ask you this, Doc, in your opinion, healthcare, what would be your definition of healthcare? So we know healthcare is self-care things that we're doing, but what do you consider to be healthcare?
Well, as far as from the practitioner's point of view, I do believe that the practitioner needs to be educating people in the ways to take better care of themselves. And I think that's what I think healthcare should be.
Right.
I think it's very, very difficult from a practitioner's stance because, as I mentioned earlier, I think people just don't have the interest to know. And so it's a chronic struggle. I was just on a Twitter conversation this morning about that. You know, most people, they think they want health, but they don't act like they do at all.
Right.
And they don't actually move forward to change. Most of them are stuck. And I believe that, once again, it comes down to this programming. If I am stuck in my health, but I look around me and my tribe is all stuck in their health as well, I'm okay because I'm fitting in with the masses, right? I don't see the need to rise above and stand out. And so I think that healthcare needs to start with the self-care. A person should be engaging with a practitioner who's willing to teach them how to be healthy.
Yes.
And then they need to take those lessons and they need to teach others.
Right.
And, you know, and it doesn't just come down to diet. I mean, it's a huge factor. You know, macro wars are going to happen forever and ever. It doesn't really matter. People need to get away from the processed food-like substances that we call food. And I think they would notice that they're doing much better there. So if we can take those kinds of lessons and start with that, mm-hmm. and then we start with the fresh air, the nature, the sunshine, the, you know, the community, the intimacy with others. There's so much that goes into health.
Right.
And I don't think that one provider is optimal to provide that to everyone.
I agree.
And so I think you do. You need to be talking to those people who's like, hey, let's talk about your posture. Let's do muscle work. Let's do that kind of stuff. You know, like me as a chiropractor, I have that hat that I wear. But then same. I have other hats as well.
Same here. Yep.
So we've got to wear, we can only wear so many hats, right? And then we have to tell people, let's build a community of other providers for you. Somebody who can work on your, you know, your mental health. Somebody who can work on, you know, the diet, the exercise, all those things. I mean, my problem with half of this stuff is that we always end up capitulating to science, right? Oh, science has got it figured out for us. But the problem is science doesn't really inform the individual. It's all about averages. It's all about crunching numbers and, you know, mishing the data around, getting rid of this, you know, confounder and that confounder. And that doesn't really speak to the individual. So the individual needs to learn how to create an experiment. And I think that's where I've kind of evolved in my practice. I'm like, okay, let's do this. You know, somebody's got right. IBS. I'm like, pick five foods, just five foods, and just do that for a week and see right. how you do.
Right.
And like, and then I'll say, pick two proteins that you feel like, if you think about it, you're like, that nourishes me. I feel good when I eat that. I'm like, great. Those are your two proteins. Now pick a couple of veggies, you know.
Right.
You know, start there and just build. You're not going to die of malnutrition in, you know, a week or two or three or four, you know,
right.
just
exactly.
because you're not getting your full array of rainbows, you know.
Yes.
And I think that we get really hooked up in this, in these conversations. And if we look at what's going on in the rest of the world, we understand that nutrition and science and the way we study it and the way we talk about what is healthy is basically cultural fallacy. You know, there's tons of people who've never eaten spinach in their lives, you know?
Right.
It's like telling them that this is what you need to be healthy is just stupid.
Right.
You know?
Yes.
And we've melded the world, and we no longer have different diets for different people, and we no longer pure races, you know, whatever the ideas that we had, we all just melded together now. And
right.
so now we've got so many variables, you know, from our genetics to our food supply to our surroundings, that we need to just step back and say, what can I control here?
Right.
And so I think that the other major problem with healthcare is it's all about addition and not about enough about subtraction.
Oh, man, I love that you said that. I love it.
Everyone wants to add the fancy thing in. Everyone wants to take another pill. Everyone wants to, you know, get the latest gadget. But they don't want to shut off all the other noise that's just creating such an overwhelm.
Right.
Not only physically, but mentally, you know?
Right.
And so if we can just step back and like listen and try to be as natural as possible, which is really, really difficult in this world that we've created.
Right.
But if we can just step back and start trusting the signals that nature is sending us, that our body is sending us every single day, if you've got a good health esteem and you understand that the human body can deal with the stuff that's coming its way, you're more willing to run experiments and wait for the results. You ignore the noise, you trust your body. But if you have really poor health esteem because you've been programmed to believe that you're broken and that, and your health comes from a doctor, you're always seeking approval, you're always seeking permission from somebody else to do something. And you know, you just, every time you come up against a barrier with low self-esteem, you just abandon course because you fail to see a lesson. You
right.
don't have enough strength in your health esteem to realize that a setback is a challenge and an opportunity to learn. And I think that is a huge, huge problem. And I don't know that one practitioner can help an individual overcome all that. And I think they need to build a team of integrative health, you know?
Yes. Adding constantly. One of the things when I was making notes before getting on live with you here was I have this thing that I kind of say, and it's a very, very general statement. A lot of people would probably disagree with it, especially scientists. They probably say it's not, you know, it's too general, it's not specific enough. But I have this thing where I always say that my opinion of disease processes or dis-ease is not enough good and too much bad, you know?
Yeah.
And I think a lot, and again, in the most general sense, if I'm talking to, you know, Joe patient, you know, I think that that's good enough. And I agree with you 1,000,000% on that. Whatever happened to stop, you know, removing the interference? Where did the idea come that we always have to add something instead of removing the bad, you know? One of the best, in my opinion, one of the best things that we could possibly do for our health is stopping eating. you know, for a certain period of time, maybe not weeks, but a couple of days, surely, you know, in certain instances. But I think that that's something too. And in my opinion, that's a philosophical thing, you know, where you're removing the bad, you're removing interference. You know, you have to eat to live, you have to breathe to live, you have to drink water. But a lot of these things that we're doing, you know, is about removing cause, right? Or removing the interference, because in my opinion, in some cases that might be a little bit more important. And interestingly, when I'm thinking about this, you had mentioned multiple practitioners or multiple providers. You know, my wife and I, we met in school, and I had told, I think maybe it was last week on tour, the story of my mother, you know, why I kind of went down the road that I did. And I knew how I wanted to practice, or specifically the type of healthcare that I wanted to provide people. And I knew that how I wanted to practice was going to require me to have several healthcare providers, you know, DC, MDs, RNs, NPs. You know, I refer people to, you know, to psychologists and psychiatrists all the time. Even for example, maybe something like, you know, maybe there's an emotional attachment with food. I don't feel like I'm qualified to talk to people on that level. So, I agree wholeheartedly with you on that point. 100%.
Yeah. Yeah. That emotional attachment to food thing, I'd just like to visit that for a second.
Sure.
I mean, I feel like at the root of it all, we all emotional eaters. I mean, we've been programmed that way in so many ways. You know, we celebrated birthdays and Christmases and Halloween and everything. There's a lot of pleasure associated with that. And, you know, we've been punished by having our favorite foods taken away. There's an emotional baggage that everyone carries around food.
Yes.
And I feel like when we get into that emotional eating cycle, you've probably heard the HALT acronym, right?
Yes.
Never eat when you hurt, angry, lonely, tired, and then I add stress on the end. But that's all great to say it, but it's very, very difficult for people to do it.
Right.
And I think that one of the reasons is that we don't have enough connection and intimacy in our lives. We have a lot of relationships that are built upon codependency, where we're relying on other people to make us happy. We don't have enough quality relationships. We lack sense of community, where we can turn to others when our codependency breaks down. And I feel like we're just not really truly dealing with our emotional health. And that's why it's so easy to fall into the food trap around it. And I'm no psychologist, but man, I feel like that's a big part of my job these days, is like listening to the way people talk about themselves and their relationships around them. And I feel like that is a huge issue at the crux of a lot of health problems, you know, whether it's just dietary or other.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. And like, you know, I think that that's a good point too, because, excuse me, the conversations that seem to take place, at least, you know, I've been in practice, this is 13 years for me, I believe. And it's very telling that the last, I feel maybe 5 or so years, the bulk of the conversations I'm having with people, at least in the initial consultation, is what you're talking about, you know? And sometimes what's interesting is some people will reveal things to me that maybe I kind of get the idea that they didn't want to reveal these things to me. And you can almost identify some of these underlying things that are going on, and you hit the nail on the head. I mean, I consider myself to be a rock when it comes to eating. You know, there's obviously things that I struggle with in my life that I don't have control over, that I work to try to be better at. But as far as my nutrition goes, if I'm using that as an example, I'm a rock, man. I can stick to the plan 100, you know, almost all the time. I have no problems with that, but I know a lot of people cannot. So yeah. I think, like you said, it's important whether we can do that with them or somebody else can do that with them. I think that has to be addressed one way or the other, you know, otherwise it's, you know, you're just covering symptoms, and obviously we know how that works out.
Yeah. I think the other thing about, you know, people's ability to stick with a program is based along kind of like a personality split. It's like, are you an abstainer?
Right.
Or are you a moderator? You know, somebody you can do things in moderation, I believe that takes a little bit more willpower right, than somebody absolutely. Can just abstain, you know?
Right, right.
And so, like, I think that's why fasting or, you know, a mono diet, like, you know, carnivore or just eating the same things every single day, I think that's why it works for some people, because they're like, if I just cut this stuff out, I'm controlling my variables and I can figure out what works. So if I'm an abstainer, like if I'm going to do a carnivore route, it's like, you know, I started my carnivore journey. I just jumped into 1 week of beef only and beef, salt and water. That was my first week when I did carnivore because I knew that if I had a bunch of other things that were carnivore-ish, you know, I wouldn't stick to it.
Right.
And so I'm just better as an abstainer. So
yes.
I just don't open up, you know, the door in the refrigerator where the chocolate's looking at me. I cannot moderate that. But if I just say, cut a line in the sand and say, I'm not going there, then I'm way more successful. And I think when working with people, you kind of ask questions like that to kind of gear, are they somebody who deals with a little bit of moderation, or are they better with abstinence, you know,
yes.
complete cutoff. Now, there's a lot of criticism about that because, you know, some studies show that, you know, people who follow restrictive diets are more likely to cheat. I hate that whole conversation because I think it's stupid.
Right.
Because just because you choose a diet doesn't mean you have to follow it for the rest of your life.
Right.
I think you should be able to heal to a point where you can start to branch out. Otherwise, what's the point?
Exactly.
Of that, you know, and I believe that people are opportunivores. I think we evolved that way, mm-hmm. where something came along and we needed to eat it, we would eat it, right?
Yes.
And I think that right now the problem is that everything's opportunity. There's equal opportunity for all sorts of food-like substances, and we just eat them too much.
Right.
Too much crap. But if we could follow more of a seasonal rhythm, I think we would be better off.
Yes.
I grew up in South Africa, Nick. It is a banana-producing country. I had never seen bananas out of season until I moved to the United States.
Oh, wow.
I had never seen bananas, you know, 14 inches long.
Right, right.
they just never were that size, you know?
Oh, my goodness.
And I grew up in a subtropical climate. I had fruit galore.
Right.
But there was a season to it. And when when the fruit's on the trees, the sun is high in the sky, the days are long, you're running around like crazy, you're eating it, you're more, you know, insulin sensitive, the glucose is taken up because you got activity and it's healthy.
Right.
But if I'm eating like a banana in the depth of winter where I'm not moving off my couch because it's miserable outside, I think that's just a complete evolutionary mismatch, as somebody refers to it as.
Yes.
And I think that's great, you know. I always think about, you know, my ancestry's Scottish, Irish, English mutt, right? I'm an Anglo-European mutt. My grandfather moved to Scotland, like, you know, 100 years ago, from Scotland 100 years ago to South Africa. His family had likely never eaten the banana.
Wow. Yeah, right. You know? Exactly.
His family had likely gone months on end without eating much besides a couple of stored potatoes and some moldy grains and living on fish and, you know, the animals that they had around them. So I think there's a complete seasonal approach, and I'm not delusional thinking that, you know, nutritional deficiencies didn't happen back then, but we are thinking about diet as optimizing right now instead of just like getting back to the basics.
There you go, man. That's right.
And if we just cut all that crap out and got back to the basics and looked at what's around us and, you know, be a locavore, we'll probably be a lot better off.
You know, and it's almost like you're just invoking some common sense into this whole thing, right? You know, like the thing that cracks me up lately, and I'll be honest with you, the last, I would say maybe year and a half, 2 years, Doc, one of the things that I've been reading more of and trying to learn more of, and obviously there are many, many, many people out there that know way more about this than I do. And I follow all those guys, like all those guys and gals on Twitter, you know, the circadian rhythm all those wonderful people. I mean, that is amazing to me. I love learning about, I probably spent more time the last 2 years learning about that than probably anything else. And one of the things that I always kind of shake my head at these days is, you know, especially what's going on in the world, you know, everybody's talking now, it seems, the benefit of sunlight. And then you have people saying, well, no, you know, that's not right. And I'm thinking to myself, okay, so hold on a second here. Can we start with some freaking common sense? In what world is the sun out to kill us? And you know, I'm not saying that people should go out and get scorched, right? But yeah. But where is the common sense? And I think you said it perfectly. It's like we have to get back to these basics more than anything else. And I love so much what you're saying, because I agree with you 100%. And you know, the sunlight, seasonal eating, you know, in the evening, turning off, you know, your all of your technology, putting blue blockers on. I mean, to me, I consider myself to be a simple guy, right? I'm a simple guy. I feel like I have common sense. And when I hear somebody say that the sunlight, that there's no such thing as any amount of safe sun exposure, I just can't take them seriously.
No.
I just can't. I can't at all. You know what I mean?
I mean, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense at all. But, you know, I think people like to make absolute statements because the gray zone isn't that exciting.
That's true. That is true. That is true, man.
So they like to just be divisive. And I think, you know, they get kind of caught up in that. I mean, everything's clickbait, right? Everything's clickbait. The whole purpose of writing an article is to get somebody to read it. So make an outlandish headline and you'll get somebody to read it. You know, I saw something on Twitter, maybe you're referring to this, is like, you know, sunscreen is needed even indoors or something stupid like that. Right. I'm like, oh, come on, people.
Right. Yeah, and that's the thing too. And then you have, and again, this goes back, and you know, it goes back to why in the world would somebody buy that? You know, even if somebody in their heart of hearts thought that the sun was in the sky, and that if you got any sun exposure at all, that you're immediately going to get skin cancer. Even if you thought that, who would, I mean, obviously there are people that do, you know, would think that you need to wear sunscreen inside, for crying out loud. You know, what's funny is I went, speaking of this, last year, I went and saw my dermatologist. I'm not really a guy that has like a lot of things on his skin, but I had this, and I've had this thing for like 25 years. I just wanted to go make sure that it was nothing. It was nothing. It was nothing at all. But what was funny was the dermatologist tried to get me, he actually in his clinic sold, he sold UV protected clothes in his clinic.
Yeah.
And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, that's insane. That's insanity. You know, the sun is good, right? And as far as the seasonal thing goes with the eating, another thing that I agree wholeheartedly, there's, you know, a lot of people on Twitter that talk about that too. And yeah, that's something that I'm on board with as well.
Yeah. I think one of the things that you brought up, and you and I agree on fasting, I believe that the power in fasting isn't only from caloric control, but it's also an ability, an opportunity for your body to take care of the other stuff, you know, because eating is a very, very expensive, you know, your body's got to put a lot of energy into breaking down food, metabolizing it, and, you know, whole catabolic, anabolic processes that go on. And if we are doing that all the time, what else can your body not take care of?
Right.
And I think that's what, you know, it deserves talking about fasting, and it doesn't have to be six-hour eating window, or 8-hour eating window, anything like that. For most people, they just need to not eat for 12 hours of the day.
Right.
If we can just get back to that for a lot of individuals. So Sachin Panda, you probably are familiar with, has quoted some studies from the Salk Institute on that circadian rhythm. And he was crunching data from a bunch of people that had apps, and he found out that people were eating about 15 and a half hours a day. And that's just ridiculous. You know, it's just like, why?
Right.
And I think a lot of it's just marketed to us, including the avoidance of the sun. It's all marketing.
Yeah.
And if we can scare people, then we get them to not think very clearly. And then we can get them to purchase our thing that will fix them. So, you know, even with the sun exposure or wearing sunscreen inside, you know, now we're like, oh, shoot, I'm scared of lamps and artificial light. So maybe I need to block that too. So I'm going to buy this product. And it doesn't make logical sense, but we've got them in such a state of fear that they're willing to swallow whatever you give them.
Absolutely.
And I think that's what we're seeing now is just media is loving this fear-based cycle. And people are just eating up anything because once you're in a state of fear, your logical thought patterns are, you know, off base. they're not working. You're stressed.
Right.
You can't think clearly.
Well, you know, I watched the video. Somebody sent me this video link, and it was a guy. I wish I could remember his name. I came off the top of my head. It was a video of this gentleman. He was talking, a doctor, and he was talking about what you're discussing right now. He said that our attention, us as consumers, is the most valuable commodity for marketing, right? For marketers. And whoever can grab your attention the most is control. And like you mentioned, you know, if you have these huge, you know, multi-billion dollar industries that are putting these things in your face, you know, in our faces nonstop, you know, that is, they have our attention. You know, for me personally, I'm just being honest. You know, I don't watch the news, at all. You know, the only social media that I'm on is Twitter. I do not do any other social media platform. I think I did have an Instagram for a minute, but I haven't been on there in probably 2 years. I don't even know what's going on with that. But I see what's interesting though, is I have these conversations with loved ones, with family members, friends, who they say these things to me. I'm thinking to myself, that is something that somebody taught you, that somebody programmed you to think what you think. Mm-hmm. And it was very interesting, this video that this doctor was talking about. He said, I'm quoting him saying that our attention, again, the consumers, is the most valuable commodity for these people, because who has your attention, you know, has all the control. And I think about, you know, these other platforms. I'm not going to mention names because I'm not going to give them any play because they disgust me. But I think these other platforms out there, that a lot of these big people are leaving, you know, the writing's on the wall, and these other smaller platforms, you know, don't have all of our attention. You know, I don't know that there's something as big at least at the moment as Facebook, or maybe there's something that does video streaming like YouTube, even though I just went ahead and said those platforms names, and I said I wasn't going to, but you get my point here. So I think my point of all this is that people, again, I don't care what it is, where you stand politically, where you stand with your health, you have to use some common sense. You have to think for yourself. And it's just the way that it has to be if you want to be successful at it, is all, I guess.
I think it's all just about the grand homogenization. You know, it's like everything is just getting blended together. Kind of like we spoke about diet earlier, and just like, you know, the world is a microcosm now. It's no longer, you know, a bunch of different cultures and different languages and different foods. It's just everything's blended, and that's the way they want us to consume the media too. So if we can just get everyone to listen to the same thing, watch the same thing, eat the same thing, then I mean, it just benefits huge corporations. And it sounds like a conspiracy theory, but I think it's just a reality of economics, that right. People who have the power want to grab more power, and the shareholders are cheering them on because they want more money. And it sucks because the little man is going to fade, you know, just in the current economic crisis that's going on right now. It's not, you know, there are some big box stores boarding up and shutting down, but they were already in trouble before this. But the little man is suffering so much more, and that you can look to that as like a, you know, reflection of what's going on with media. You know, it's just the big guys are getting all the ears. They're running. The little guys are too fringe and are getting, you know,
Yes.
Shut down. And I think it's sad. I think that we should all be willing to entertain alternate positions and, you know, have frank discussion. I think one of the worst things that's happened is just this whole bipartisanship has basically entered every aspect of life.
Yes.
You're either one party or you're not.
Right.
You know, and I think that's unfortunately the big downfall of where things are going, and it's playing down to human health. Either you're healthy or you're not.
Exactly. 100%. And I tell you what, man, one of the things here, just kind of wrapping up. First of all, Doc, I want to have you back on because this discussion for me was amazing, man. And I want to have you back. But one thing I do want to say about all this is that one of the benefits of me doing this and having people like you on is that it makes me feel way more comfortable knowing that there are healthcare providers out there like you that not only are obviously very smart people and are very capable at helping people get well, but it's not only that ability, it's what you stand for and what your belief systems are. And I think that, you know, more than anything, that foundation is most important than anything else. But Doc, before we go, just do me a favor, tell everybody where they can find you online, your website, social media.
Yeah, I'm a little bit all over the place. Like you, I'm on Twitter. I am Dr. Jerome is my handle across most platforms. So you can find me on Twitter and Instagram. I'm there. Facebook, I have an account, but I'm never really there. You know, my website is drjeromecraig.com. It's under reconstruction currently, so it's not as something I'm necessarily proud of, but you know, it's what it is. And I like having conversations, and I appreciate this opportunity because I think it all always allows us to hone our message, become a little bit more succinct in our approach, and give us another way to really learn how to talk to different individuals. And I think all of us should be out there preaching our message and getting feedback of what it sounds like to all sorts of audiences so we can be better communicators about health.
Yes.
And I think it's great that you're providing a platform for people just to get on and chat. And I'm looking forward to doing it again.
Yeah, 100%, man. Doc, listen, I appreciate the time, my friend. Wonderful discussion. And listen, take care, brother, and we'll talk to you soon, my friend.
All right, thank you.